Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Breakfast Bites, part of the Stadium Miguel Network and presented by our sponsor, Norris & Norris PA. Norris & Norris PA out of Lake City, Florida, is a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. And you can give Guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust, and estate planning. Well, welcome back, everybody. And we've got a special guest on the show tonight, leader of the Stadium Miguel podcast and network, Corey. How are you doing tonight, my man? And if you're talking, you're on mute. No luck.
Amateur hour over here, man. apologies. Thanks for having me, guys. I don't think Dan gonna like that leader of Stadium Miguel, man.
Fellas, Dev, Will, how are you guys doing? I see you, Will, you got the bourbon barrels behind you. It sounds like you're headed to the Lexington this weekend.
I am heading to Lexington. You know, contrary to what people say on the timeline, I do actually ride or die for the Gators, whether the quarterback is smiling after close losses or not. And so I'll be up there cheering my guts out for him, just like I was in Jacksonville and just like I will be at in Gainesville for the Tennessee game and beyond.
You set discourse all day on, what was that, Monday? Fire him with the hot takes.
I mean, well, now that we have officially fired Billy and the coaching hot board rumors have settled down a little bit, I figured there needed to be something tossed into the fire so that people had something to talk about, you know?
Got to start a work.
You had articles getting written and
yeah. It just happens. Sometimes, you know, you're just sitting there on Sunday and you see a video and you're still mad about the game last night and you just, you know, you let things out on Twitter and then all of a sudden it blows up and you're just like, how did this happen? And you go to work the next day and you're not really paying attention and you come back and your mentions are riddled with high school coaches telling you that you've never played a down of football and all this stuff. And I'm like, well, you guys kind of nailed it.
Well, I'll be surprised if Dev and I don't have a few articles when we're in Oxford next weekend with our Lane Kiffin shirt. So we might have Ole Miss beat riders coming at our next week. But let's get into that. Corey, you guys have discussed on the show. Dan has been tweeting his list and all of his rumors on the timeline and on the show. Where do you stand right now in the coaching search?
I mean, everything I'm still hearing is Lane Kiffin. I think it's Lane till it isn't Lane. The plan after Lane gets a little shaky, you know, from just my opinion. I think Lane is the obvious number one choice of every program. Everybody's after him right now at this point, right? So I think he just fits the mold of a Florida coach. You know, he checks a lot of boxes. After that, when you get into Drinkwitz at Missouri, Brent Key at Georgia Tech, like some of the other names are going to be another just crapshoot in my
opinion. A dumpster fire waiting to happen.
Yeah, we'll be back here doing this again in 3 years, bro.
Well, there's been a lot of discourse with the LSU job opening up, the Auburn job officially open. I don't think that job was open when we recorded and dropped Sunday morning. So that job has also come in. That's probably the third best job, or maybe the second best job with the state of Louisiana right now. Dev, what are you seeing with the discourse and the media members and how their narrative has switched with that Auburn job opening up in the Lane Kiffin sweepstakes?
Yeah, I think that whoever it is that's calling the shots at ESPN on what they want the company line to be, you know, Peter Burns is coming out this week and saying that Auburn's the best situation out there, that they just – fired their coach after 2.5 years. Florida and LSU, I can understand an argument. Both of those are, you know, the premier school in their state, giant jobs, top five, top 10 jobs in the country. Auburn is a great job. I like Auburn. I'm excited to go to Auburn next fall. It's a different level. There's a reason the top of their list, you know, it's looking like well, maybe we'll keep DJ Durkin if this goes well these next couple of games. Maybe we'll go the Summerall route. It seems like Auburn is where Florida was 4 years ago, where the former SEC head coach didn't work out and pan out the way you expected it to. So I think that Auburn is a different hiring pool. I think LSU's job search really hasn't started yet. They've gotten, you know, the president in place. The president promoted the athletic director, but didn't really they promoted the athletic director in name only. I think the president came in after that athletic director got promoted by him and said that, you know, we'll reevaluate. A lot was on his plate in the first 8 hours of the job. And so he kind of on a whim decided that the interim athletic director was going to become the permanent athletic director. So they still, even though they have a president and AD in place at this point, I think that they're still in a rocky position, and they still have that governor that's lurking around looking for a microphone and a platform to say something crazy. So I think that you're looking at Lane either staying at Ole Miss or coming to Florida. I don't think that there's any other job out there that's going to entice him to leave the situation he's in. I think there's special ties to the University of Florida that make our job more attractive to Lane Kiffin than it may be to another candidate out there that's, you know, having success at a school that's not on Florida's level. I think that the guy that's put it the best out of anybody that I've heard so far is Edgar Thompson. And he said it's going to be Lane because it has to be Lane. I haven't heard anything, you know, more precise or more well said than that. I think that that the guys that are running the search know the timing's right for Florida, the timing's right for Lane. He's been there for 6 years. He's maxed out what he can do there. He's 31-3, I think, at home the last 4 years, 5 years at Ole Miss since the COVID year. I think he's 31-3 at home. So I think that now's the time. Florida's hired the premier search firm in the country to assist in making this hire. I think the stars are aligning. The betting lines for the offshore books that people love to throw out there, you know, they're pointing us towards that North Star. They mean a ton. We all know that the prediction markets, everything else. So I like the way it's looking. Long way to go. Time kills deals. But I think as of November 5th, we should all be pretty encouraged with where things are at.
I think one of the things you mentioned was the tier levels. You know, Florida has, I don't know why we came out and said this, but I didn't think it really mattered at the time, but we've let it be known that we are not hiring anybody from the G5 again, which part of me, you know, I hesitate to do business like that because I do think that, you know, just because your last coach didn't work out doesn't mean you got to look at everything he did that failed and then turn to the next guy and be like, oh, you have that quality, you're out. I think that's kind of a dumb way to go about it. But I do think that Auburn and LSU are actually hiring from the same hiring pool because if Lane Kiffin, you know, these betting markets move for a reason. So if Lane Kiffin is really starting to let it be known that he's going to go to Florida, then that means that Auburn and LSU are most likely both focusing on John Summerall, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I haven't been nearly as impressed as a lot of the national media have with him at Tulane. Seems like a decent coach, but probably needs a couple more years of building before he you know, really takes a job like LSU or even Auburn. But they might be hiring from the same hiring pool. The other thing is that I'm sort of warming up to the idea of Lincoln Riley leaving. And I feel like, you know, if we were to lose out on Lane or if he were to stay at Ole Miss, I feel like we might be able to poach him from USC. Or on the flip side, I feel like, you know, there's a chance he might go to LSU. What do y'all think?
Well, when Lincoln left Oklahoma, that was kind of a fly by night. You know, nobody saw that coming. And all of a sudden he's on the first flight out of Norman to Los Angeles. So it would kind of be historically the kind of move Lincoln Riley would make to do that out of nowhere. I think that I've seen the buzz about Lincoln Riley come up too and think the same. You hear anything on that, Silk?
Yeah, there's a lot of smoke out there about him not being happy out in LA. USC isn't an easy job. Like, you know, people think is traditionally it's been a destination, but like, who was the last coach to be successful there? It's been a very long time. And LA isn't, you know, for everybody as far as living arrangements. Do I think he wanted to get out of it? Yeah. I mean, his buyout, I think, is like $10 or $11 million, something around that part. Will Florida play in that pool? But I like Lincoln Riley as a backup, as my number two right now as well. You will have to give him the keys and a lot of money. They'll get a elite defensive coordinator because his defenses have been terrible out there in USC. But from an offensive standpoint, I love everything about that offense. He loved DJ Lagway. He was trying to poach him last minute in the recruiting cycle to come out there to USC. I think he was one of the final three when DJ chose as well. His track record with quarterbacks fits Florida's mold. You know, got a couple of Heismans under his belt. He's still young too. Like a lot of people got, you know, they wrapped up in his last couple of years at USC. But these guys are still young, and the match of school talents and, you know, the area you at, all that matters, just finding the right spot. So I'm actually pretty high on Lincoln Riley. If we miss on Lane, I would love Lincoln.
It's fitting your top two candidates bolted for USC in the middle of the night from SEC programs.
well, at the time it was a Big 12 program.
That's a good point. But they were coming into the SEC, and he knew that.
Yeah. The other thing I really like about Lincoln Riley is he always has stud wide receivers. And he, you know, it took him a little while. He seemed to be married to Alex Grinch, almost like Mullen was to Grantham. But he finally divorced him. And Alex Grinch, I think he went somewhere like to like Washington State or something. Then I don't believe he's a defensive coordinator anymore. And this new guy, I've been impressed that they've, you know, held their own in the Big Ten, because that was always the bugaboo with Lincoln, is he couldn't recruit the D-line hogs that you needed in the SEC. And it could just be my orange and blue glasses, but I do think that if he were to come to Florida with the natural recruiting background that we have, that he would be able to get some of these big time recruits out of South Florida, out of Jacksonville, Orlando, Tampa, that just churn out every single year. And you know, if heck, I don't think Ron Roberts is like the best DC in the country, but I feel like if we retain the entire defensive staff, like, he would recruit just fine on the defensive side of the ball. And I don't see a world where he hires below them. No disrespect to any of those guys, because clearly they've been carrying their weight this year. But we got to keep an eye on that. I just saw that right before I came on, Josh Pate dropped a little nugget on Bussing with the Boys. And even though I'm a little mad at Pate right now, because he keeps talking about Lane and LSU, and he just forgets that the Florida job is the best job open in the country. He's in love with LSU for some reason. But he did
right now, like, the whole own three is like a cult. Everybody got the same beliefs a little bit. So
yeah, you know what it may be is that, you know, how they obviously know that if they drop a little recruiting thing in July, saying Florida's got some guys that are going to flip or they're going to whiff on this or that, they just know that it's a clickbait factory with these Florida fans online. And they probably know that with the LSU coaching search, especially with the governor and, you know, we got Kim Mulkey out there. I think that's why the president backtracked a little bit on the athletic director, is because Kim Mulkey went to a press conference and acted like her dog died when she had to talk about Scott Woodward getting fired and all this stuff. And she said all these things about how he was a Louisiana guy and all this stuff. Well, Virge Osbury, I mean, you could have been talking about either one of them, and she just didn't seem to say anything other than he's a nice guy. And so, you know, I think that they've got some internal stuff going on, no matter what Pate and all these other people are talking about with their supposed alignment that happened overnight. We as Florida fans certainly know that it does not absolutely happen overnight that, you get alignment.
Another thing about just going back to the Lincoln Riley, smoke, one of the things that I've been wanting in a head coach is to know what your identity is going to be. You know, you look at Josh Heupel's Tennessee, you know that they're going to run good offense. You look at Lane Kiffin, you know that he's going to run good offense. When Billy Napier came in, we were like, we think he can recruit pretty good. And that was it. Like, nobody was singing his praises as an offensive coach. When you hire a Lincoln Riley, yeah, the defense might stink, for lack of a better word, for a little bit. But you know – you're getting a guy that's going to coach a top five, top 10 offense nationally. And at Florida, if you have a top 10 or top five, top 10 offense nationally, you're looking at quarterbacks that can win a Heisman Trophy. You're looking at a team that can outscore a Kirby Smart Georgia team, a Mike Bobo led Georgia offense. And if you're able to do that, if you're able to outscore Georgia, if you're able to outscore the best teams on your schedule every year, then you have a chance to win the SEC. You have a chance to get where we want to go. So I think as much as the individual coaches is important, having a coach that you know what identity you're getting as soon as they, you know, have their introductory press conference, I think that's big. I don't necessarily think you get that with a Drinkwitz. I think that Brent Key, you know what you're getting. It's the style that doesn't historically fit Florida. It didn't work with Napier. It didn't work with Muschamp. Mullen, it worked for 3 years until he couldn't recruit to what the style was anymore for in his fourth year.
You could have just ended the sentence after he didn't recruit.
Right. So it's the identity that matches, and you talk about alignment in a different way, the alignment with the school and the identity of the team that the coach you're hiring is trying to bring in. I think that that's important. And I think that Lincoln Riley, outside of Lane Kiffin, might match that vibe of Florida better than just about anybody that's out there. So I think he's a very strong number two.
He's almost like Mullen plus.
Yeah. Who do you guys got as the like top offense in the SEC right now? Who do you think is the top play caller?
Sark or Kiffin?
I would put Kiffin over Sark. I think Kiffin, even in the big games that Kiffin loses, it's not really because their offense sputtered. Like Sark, you know, he put up seven. I know it was the first time that, you know, Arch was playing and first game against Matt Patricia. Matt Patricia's bringing this, you know, NFL caliber defensive system down to college for the first game. But, you know, Sark has some other big games where the offense just, it looks a little Napier-y at times in some of these big games. It's better than Napier, don't get me wrong. But
that's crazy.
he only put up 21 points against Billy in the Swamp.
Yeah, I think that the Sark's
our defense, man, is just playing stout football.
Yeah.
That's a thing, and it's a – I think that he's very limited with his quarterback thing. And Arch, the last couple of weeks, he's played a little bit better. You know, they hung 34 on Vandy last week, which I'm not really a big believer in Vandy's little Cinderella story that they got going on. But I think that if you watch a Sark offense, the guy's a good play caller. I think that he's limited by what his quarterback's capable of doing right now.
He also, yeah, there's a reason that Lame was calling that national championship game until he got fired, and then it was Sark a couple years ago. So I would take Lane over Sark, but you know, if Sark wanted to come to Florida, I'd take him tomorrow.
Just from an X and O standpoint, is just Lincoln Riley could go X and O with both of those guys. You know, I think really? Florida turns into one of the top offenses in the country. We got a real chess player, you know, with the cards in his hand this time.
Was he? He's coached three Heisman Trophy winners.
Yeah,
as head coach,
Baker, Kyler, and Caleb Williams, right?
Yep.
And then he helped develop Jalen Hurts. Am I right?
Yeah, Jalen Hurts. Yeah, he had Hurts.
Because Jalen Hurts at Bama was a lot different than the Jalen Hurts that you got when he went to Oklahoma and then in the NFL. So you're talking about an elite. Like top two, top three in the country quarterback developer.
People forget, like they just throw like Lincoln Riley to the wolves because of what was going on at USC. And USC is just a different animal, but he's still one of those guys. I wanted him last year when we started our coaching boards. I had him like one or two.
Yeah,
I had him like one and two. So yeah, I still got him up there. You know, if Florida's down to entertain that $10 million buyout, we miss on Lane. Yeah, I think that would be the call. I know he wants out of L.A.
I may be wrong about this, but I thought Gator Dave may have said something about that if he leaves, then he doesn't have a big buyout. But if they fire him, he has a big buyout. But I can't remember if that was him was somebody else. Or
if they fire him, it's $90 million. If he leaves, it's $10.
Got it.
Yeah.
That's a little – yeah.
That's a big difference.
Do we know what his salary is right now? I'm sure it's top five, top 10 in the country.
He signed a 10-year, $110 million contract in 2022.
So a little over 10 a year?
Yeah, 11 a year.
11 a.m. Not a math major.
No, no, that's all right. We'll let you do law. Corey, have you looked at, obviously with Lane being everyone's top target right now, as dialed in as you are, have you had a chance to look at Ole Miss's staff? Obviously Pete Golding, you got Charlie Wise Jr. And we saw that report from Matt Hayes, which is garbage about Charlie Wise, being entertained for this offensive coordinator opening last year, but also their general manager, Billy Glasscock, who was at Texas and player personnel for 3 years, and now he's at the Rebels, draft picks every year, tons of talent. Who have you seen from that staff you'd like to poach?
I haven't dove into that staff. Golden is an interesting one because, he's had some good defenses in the past, but they haven't been great this year.
Right.
I don't know if it's just a personnel thing, bad year. Sometimes coordinators just have a down year. I don't know if that's the thing. Do you entertain keeping Ron Roberts? A little iffy on that. I'll go with whatever Lane decides if we got it. I thought Lane's gonna try to hire the best of the best. I was impressed with the staff he did put together at Ole Miss, and he got the relationship. So I think he'll be able to take some guys off other staffs as well. So I wouldn't be married to anybody in particular on that staff. I want to see what Lane, when he gets the keys to the Florida job, like how aggressive he gets with trying to poach a Bama, poach a Georgia. He got relationships, maybe get a guy to NFL.
How about Blake Baker from LSU?
Yeah, that whole staff is free.
Yeah.
There's a certain Florida head coach out there that I don't think is working right now either.
There's also a certain linebacker that his daughter's dating that he could bring over to the Gators as well. So we got some connections.
We got headbusters at linebacker. We don't need weeks.
The thing about if Lane does come to Florida, you're making him the highest paid coach in the country, the second, third highest paid coach in the country. You're trusting him with whatever he wants to do with his staff, whether it's bring Charlie Weiss Jr. over and Pete Golding over. I know some of the buzz and rumors on the Ole Miss side have been that if Lane were to leave, that Golding would be on their short list along with the Summeralls and those sorts of names. So that may be getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, but I think that Golding, he's already the top paid assistant in the SEC right now. I think that his next step up could be the Ole Miss job if they're happy with the program that he's created. And just kind of trying to recreate the magic with his defensive coordinator,
yeah,
or keep the magic going.
Corey, is there anybody on our staff you'd like for him to entertain? You mentioned Ron Roberts, obviously Billy G, who's had three stints here. I'm not necessarily calling for him to be the wide receiver coach under Lane Kiffin, but he could certainly find a role to help with the retainage. That's going to be the number one thing is retaining of the players, but any coaches you'd like for him to retain as well. We say it's a fire sale.
I think it's a fire sale, man. Defensive line coaches I think Lane would be able to get a top guy. I like Chapman though. If there's one guy, like I would say Chapman. Outside of that, bro, like I think, you find a way to keep Billy G on the staff. He may be getting a little too old to be, receiver coach still.
Yep.
But you find a way to keep him around if he's interested, and maybe, like you said, in a maybe player retention, off the field role, maybe some type of liaison, like who knows? But you want to keep a guy like Billy G around if you can. But outside of that, even strength and conditioning, bring Savage over from Ole Miss.
Yeah,
I would clean house.
Maybe Lane could take a page out of Napier's playbook and make Billy G the associate head coach for some ridiculous long title that gives him a nice pay raise. Cause I do think that Billy G has proved to me that guy is all Gator. I think play for the patch. It hits with the players. It hits with the fans, especially from what we had been here in the last 3.5 years. And he's obviously not little Urban Meyer, but you can tell that he still talks the way Urban talked and he doesn't talk the way Napier talked. And I think that's just a good dude to have on staff, a nice transition, because not everything with the program is broken. It was really just the 60 minutes on the field and then a couple things you can nitpick here and there, Sunday through Friday. But I think the way that Billy G has handled this, if we would be blessed to have him on staff and him not to get a head coaching job, because I think he might be well on his way to finally getting a shot if he wants it.
I think he deserves a shot.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been impressed, like, from the pressers and his demeanor on the sidelines. He sounds like more of a head coach than we've had the last 3-4 years, just to be honest, man.
I couldn't believe what he was saying about the middle eight, where he just broke that down. He was like, that's the place we got to be better. I was like, this is unreal.
Yeah.
The game management was phenomenal, I thought. I had the one little nitpicky thing there at the end of the game with the timeout before the 2-minute warning. But,
yeah,
I mean, getting 11 guys on the field, it turns out it's not that hard.
Yeah, I mean, less procedure calls. Like, yep. The team just looked and functioned, getting on and off the field in between plays. It didn't look clunky.
Yeah,
we got 11 players on special teams. Like, it just wasn't. They looked like they should have been looking from an execution standpoint. You know, we still didn't win the football game, but you know, it's been funky watching Billy. I don't want to get into the Billy bag, but it was a tough watch every Saturday.
That was like what the USF game probably should have looked like execution wise, like second game of the year. You've got a couple mistakes, you have a couple drop passes, but like You're clearly a really good, solid team. And, you know, the only difference is we fired the coach and we're what? It's 8 games in. But that's kind of par for the course. You know, Billy used to always treat those first 5 games like they were preseason. So what are we at? We're really only 0-3, I think. Maybe 1-3 because of the Texas win.
Yeah.
Well, I had a take. Speaking of some coaching searches, Florida State, their AD came out with a vote of confidence. I guess if you want to call that a vote of confidence, a few weeks ago. They finally win an ACC game, snap a 9-game losing streak. But I had a take earlier, maybe 3-4 weeks ago. I think we hadn't fired Billy yet, but I'd rather be in our position now than where currently Miami is in terms of – they kind of got a false hope with Mario Cristobal. Obviously, he's going to recruit well down there, but never really going to be a national championship contender, even in the ACC. And I think after his press conference last year in late October, where he slammed the podium and said, this is the direction we're headed in, they're 4-4 in ACC play. Do you kind of agree, even though – the losing records we've had in the last decade, the glimpses we had under Mullen, but from a program standpoint, once we get the right guy, I mean, even with no coach right now, I think we're in a better spot long-term health-wise than Miami currently is, despite, you know, having a Heisman finalist last year and Mario Cristobal down in Miami.
Yeah, I think we're in better shape than both as far as – like, I think Miami's stuck. Like, it's going to be hard for them to fire Mario Cristobal, all right? They're in bed with him. And to be honest, they should be okay with the type of results they're getting. Like, I just think that's – Miami and USC is, like, the same job a little bit, you know? They keep hiring Miami guys. They want a Miami guy down there. Mario recruits well. Not the best in-game coach. Not the best quarterback recruiter. You're gonna have to live with him changing his offense every couple of years because he doesn't have an offense. You know, he hired mercenaries to come in and run his offense, but he also put guardrails around a lot of the play calling. So they're gonna be stuck with him for a while. I don't think they're gonna fire him. I don't think they should fire him. I just think that's what Miami's about to be and what they've been since like 2001. It's been a long time. But Florida State, the best thing ever happened for us is them winning that 13 games, man. Like, they got – Sexton got that crazy extension, and they can't afford to get rid of him. When they didn't fire him after 2 wins, like, all bets are off. Like, they don't care about football. Like, there's no way you win 2 football games in year 5 and you keep this guy. Like, they're not serious, or they're just broke.
ACC, too.
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I think that you're seeing the haves get more in the SEC and the Big Ten, and the have-nots get less in the ACC and the Big 12.
It's been great seeing them their fans on Twitter posting photos of what's the Spanx lady's name?
Oh yeah, I saw the video.
they keep reposting her selfies with her family from her Instagram, and they're like, somebody ask her if she likes football, and she's down there on the sideline, and it just cracks me up to see those people miserable. I think Mario, he kind of reminds, like, he's better than Will Muschamp, but I feel like if Will Muschamp ever got a ACC job, he kind of would be like Mario. Like, you know, the guy basically went like 7-5, 8-4 every year at South Carolina until the bottom fell out. And, you know, at Florida, he had the one really good year, always recruited well, couldn't figure out the quarterback, always put guardrails on whichever offensive coordinator he hired. And it's kind of what Mario seems to be doing. But I think the reason that Florida is in a better position is because of what Todd Golden did with the basketball team, and not necessarily, obviously, you know, great to win a national championship, but I think what it did to sort of ignite the fan base and let everybody know that the Florida Gators are still a premier brand in the country, and that if we are all kind of pulling in the same direction, then we can win a national championship. And it's easier to kind of go on a run without having all the alignment and win a national championship in basketball. But I think it woke a lot of people up on the football side to look and say, like, okay, we've got this guy who is recruiting well. He's building the roster pretty well. We are clearly improving, but then the results just wouldn't be there. But now that everybody was focused, it was like, okay, now we really know that it's time to move on. And so, you know, thank goodness for Todd Golden that he was able to somehow get all these different voices and administrators, you know, from the president on down to sort of look at football. And now it seems like we are really set to do some damage as we're close to being dangerous, as one Billy Napier used to say.
And Todd did it in 3 years. It wasn't we have to, you know, we got to really build this program up. To do it the right way, it's going to take time. You know, the process precedes the results. No, it was year one, we brought in Will Richard. Year two, you bring in Walter Clayton. Year three, you're 36-4, have the best season in school history and win a national championship. Boom. And I think I think you're right. I think that woke people up to, in the modern era, in the second biggest revenue sport in the country, that a school like Florida that had that, you know, 90s, early 2000s success that's kind of been in the wilderness for 15 years in both of the major sports, quite frankly, 10 years for basketball, 15 years for football. But in the NIL era, in the revenue sports, Florida can and should still be competitive. And I think that's the effect that they had. And I think that's kind of why you're seeing us make the swing for those biggest names in the country, because it's, yeah, if we get the right coach in here, it's not a 5, 10, 15 year rebuild. It's a 3 years and you get University of Florida results. So I think that's a great point. And then to Silk's point earlier about the comparison between Miami and USC, I think it's pretty apt. Like, you got, you know, two major metropolitan areas. I think that Miami still does care about football, you know, to the extent that, you know, you can have a home field advantage in an off-campus stadium and fill it up for, you know, two games a year. But I do think that they have a fan base that cares. I think even, especially Lincoln Riley at USC, you're looking at a school and an area and a fan base that doesn't care anymore, which is part of, you know, probably the reason why Lincoln Riley wants out, because the USC of 2005 with Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart's dead. And I don't think that it's coming back. And I think it's been replaced by the Oregons and Will's Washingtons of the world.
Well, I think the reason for that is Miami fans, those people, now that they've got two losses, just watch out if they lose to Pittsburgh or I can't remember who else they go play up north, but they,
Pittsburgh.
But they don't show up except for the Florida and Florida State game, or if the team is undefeated. And at other places in the true South, you know, which is kind of like Eugene, Oregon, and not really Seattle, but, you know, it's college towns. Like, Auburn and Florida are terrible teams this year, and it's still a packed house, because what else are you going to do? Like, it was almost like that video of Hugh Freeze. I don't know if people saw it, but he's telling them all these people save up just to go to Ben Hill Griffin Stadium and Jordan-Hare once a year. And go see the Gators and play. And you just don't really have that in some of these big metropolitan areas, because, you know, you probably have a yacht that you can go, you know, cruise around, you know, the Keys with and stuff. And that's just, it's just a different, it's a different lifestyle, and that's what makes the SEC so great.
That's facts. All facts.
Yeah. Anything else you guys want to touch on coaching search? I know slight mention of Jed Fish. Will's been quiet, and I don't want to bring it up, but he does have three games coming up, two on the road, one across country before he gets to take on Oregon at home, which could potentially be a playoff opportunity.
I came out politicking for Jed Fish very hard from the beginning, and then I started staying quiet, and all of a sudden you see those odds going lower and lower. They're getting closer and closer. And I never want, you know, anybody to confuse the fact, like, I don't want Jed Fish to be number one. I don't want Jed Fish to be number two. It's Lane Kiffin, then Lincoln Riley for me. But I think once you start getting into the Brent Keys, the Eli Drinkwitz, the, you know, names like that, I think you take a shot on a guy who has a lot of NFL experience, who is still young, who's a proven quarterback developer, who was roommates with Howie Roseman, who would probably get a GM from the Eagles tree somewhere down here to do that, and who fits Florida. And on top of all that, has just, I know that he is a diehard Florida fan, and he has Gator blood running through his veins. And so I think if you're going to end up taking a shot because you've whiffed on Lane Kiffin or Lincoln Riley, then it makes the most sense to go after Jed as opposed to going after someone who you know does not fit what Florida wants to do.
Well, we could have had someone out of the Howie Roseman tree last year, but we decided to get a guy who's been sidelined from the Atlanta Falcons that we eventually got rid of, and he was there for 19 years. So maybe Lane can have or any of our next coaches can have a choice in who the general manager is. Speaking of that, if we do go a new general manager route, would you want that hire before our next head coach is announced, or kind of have him a role in picking his own guy in terms of like the Nick Polk role?
Yeah, from what I was hearing, and this is I spoke to an agent that handles coaches, you know, for he don't really deal with players, so he handles coaches. He was telling me the approach would likely be if it was Lane or whoever the coach is, if it's a playoff type coach, like they would hire a GM and send that GM to start the recruiting and the early signing day transfer portal to get that going while they still manage. So from what I'm being told, I expect the next coach to hire their GM and send that GM, if they're a playoff type team, to send the GM to Gainesville while they continue to work the playoffs and have them handle recruiting, et cetera.
Now, do we think that hire is announced pre signing day or early signing day, but maybe the coach informs his team despite a potential playoff berth that he is leaving? Just to, you know, Lane, for example, he loves Ole Miss. He probably wants their long-term health to be good, so give them a head start. Anything you're hearing from there as well of a potential announcement to Florida, but still coaching them through playoff season?
Yeah, I think between Thanksgiving weekend, which is the last game for everybody, between that and early signing day, I think Florida is going to make an announcement.
I think we are on the same timeline as you are on that. So, yeah, just beneficial for everybody. You know, these guys invested a lot of time of where they're currently coaching. Certainly don't want to leave them in a bad spot. And with this the new timeline and where the transfer portal falls on early signing day, just making those guys, you know, they go home for Christmas and a lot of uncertainty and who knows what information they're getting fed, who's tampering and all that good jazz. So, yeah, I think a decision has to be made regardless of where the former coach is at in that part of the season.
Well, since he's opened up the line of communication with his team, I mean, he made a public comment that he spoke to his team about the Florida opening in October.
Yeah.
So if he were to go to them after the Egg Bowl or however the conversation happens and say, yes, this is happening, but we're finishing out the season, we're going to go try to win a national championship, that's not something that they're going to be totally blindsided by. Everybody's heard the rumors. Everybody knows what's happening. I think it's what's the best for, you know, Lane's not going to leave. If he does come to Florida, he's not going to put himself at the biggest disadvantage possible just because he wants to protect his old school's feelings. Right. And he's also not going to put the school that he cares about, and, you know, he's done a documentary on and all the jazz the last 6 years about how much he's enjoyed Ole Miss. He's not going to put them in a spot where, you know, it's December 28th and he's telling them for the first time that he's leaving to take the Florida job after they lose the second round of the playoffs, or, you know.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that it makes sense for all sides, you know, that this leaks out and gets public as soon as the regular season ends. That way that initial shock wears off. They don't play a playoff game in the first round until the 19th, I think, is the first round date.
Yeah, it's right before Christmas, somewhere in that timeline.
That gives you 3 weeks post I'm leaving for Florida announcement to prepare for a game. So I think that that's plenty of time to not be distracted by what the future may hold.
Silk, you just let us know when we need to put Dan's notifications on, because he's been hot on the trail with all the coaching news ever since he was dropping the nuggets that that Napier was going to be fired regardless of results. So let us know when we need to put the notifications on, and we'll let Dan tweet it out.
We got two totally different. So his source is definitely UF side. Mine is agency side. So I got some plugs over at CAA giving me some information and whatnot. So we just match notes, man, and see what lines up.
It's interesting that you bring that up. One of the things we've been talking about is kind of comparing this coaching search with all the smoke with Lane to the previous coaching searches. Not necessarily the one with Napier, because Strickland kind of just like, it was like public knowledge that he was focusing on Napier, and then he was flying and they did their little meeting and that was it. But going back to when Mullen was hired and, you know, Chip Kelly leaves us at the altar, and then going back to when McElwain was hired. And I actually heard, I think it was James DeVirgilio on Gator Nation Football Podcast. I'd never heard what actually happened with Bob Stoops before the McElwain hire, but
except all your friends lost money because you told them to bet them.
That was a very, very tough scene as a pledge walking into the fraternity, telling them that that Clutch Like MJ was letting me know that Bob Stoops was that was my first insider heat moment, and I've never lived it down. But all of that stuff was just coming on message boards, and the message board beat writers are all getting it from UF. But now it, you know, immediately, like, Pete Nakos is out there putting on the On3 message boards that if he had to put in an RPM pick for Lane, he would put 70% to Florida, which tells me it's really was probably 95%, because he wouldn't be posting that publicly on a message board if it wasn't, you know, kind of a done deal. But those national people all talk to the agent side, and the agents usually have much better information than the administration, that obviously wants to believe that their first, you know, number one guy is going to say yes. And so I haven't been nearly as stressed or worried about this coaching search, because I just feel like all the agents and the national people keep talking about how Lane is going to Florida because Lane has turned into this very sentimental guy that loves the fact that him and his previous ex, now rekindled Halloween date, had their first ever date in Gainesville. And, you know, his father-in-law played at Buchholz and all this stuff. And so maybe it's all meant to be.
Who wrote this script, man?
I don't know.
From a guy that said he's going to play Rocky Top all night in the swamp after he beats Florida and Urban Meyer, to us eventually
It's really clear how much mature he is, just based on how he's handling all the smoke. Like, he reminds me of the way Billy Donovan used to answer questions about going to the NBA. And Billy never said that, I'm not going. He always said the NBA is intriguing. It's the highest level of basketball. I would love to see how I stack up there. And then, you know, he almost went one time. He decided it wasn't the right time. And then he goes and he takes a job, and he's been there ever since. But it seems to be the way Lane is handling this. I mean, what other coach has, you know, Summerall got asked about it in his Tulane press conference, and he literally looked like a deer in the headlights, and then got absolutely smacked on Saturday night against a 4-4 team. So I think it's very unique the way he's handling it. I think it's mature. I think it speaks a lot to how, you know, grown up he has gotten in the Middle Ages since he Well, since he was the head coach at Tennessee.
I know we're saying he wants to be sensitive to Ole Miss. Somebody's getting trolled here.
Yeah, that was Devin and Jackson. I mean, we're going to have to play these guys now that they've redone the schedule. I hope we leave them in the dumps and all those fat guys in penny loafers, as somebody once tweeted, are sitting there crying while they're overcooking their meat.
Shout out to Jaws, man.
One of one.
He hasn't made very many friends on Twitter these last couple weeks. We're really close to the situation. We read all the stuff every single day, but even just some of these national guys like Brett McMurphy tweeting during the Georgia Ole Miss game when Georgia takes the lead and ends up beating Ole Miss, big win in Athens. For the people in Gainesville, if you know, you know. Just stuff like that, that you're just like, that's, you know, a little different kind of buzz than what you would typically expect for, you know, Florida to have not even fired Billy at that point. it was just interesting little, you know, nuggets from the national guys like that that made me question if this is, you know, the worst kept secret in college sports that Lane's going to end up leaving to go to Gainesville.
Worst kept secret for about 18 months, if we're being honest. I guess 13 months, if we're being honest.
But we got to get over the finish line before we start doing victory dances. But yeah.
Well, guys, I know we're in the middle of a coaching search, but we also got to play a football game on Saturday. If Will, you'll be at. We're playing Kentucky. I think they're like 3-5 this year. Just got their first SEC win over Auburn in the Plains. Oh, my. And I'm going to be honest. I don't know anything about Kentucky besides their offense stinks. The Gators have struggled in Lexington. We've lost three straight in Lexington, or two straight.
Two straight. And
haven't won by double digits since 2013 in Lexington, which is unbelievable to even think about. So, Corey, where do you see the Gators stacking up? We got the availability report about 20 minutes before this show dropped. 13 guys out, a lot of contributors. Three big-time contributors on questionable as well. It's just a laundry list of an injury report each week. Hopefully a new strength and conditioning coach can clean that up. But how do you see the Gators faring Saturday night in Kroger Field?
I think Billy G going to have them ready to play. You know, they could easily have a letdown after a rivalry. The way we lost was an emotional letdown. So they could easily come in and fall flat. But I think they're going to go on the road and handle business. The run game should be solid. Just hand the ball off to Jaden Ball and everything else should do what it do. I need DJ just to hit the easy throws, man, clean up his footwork. That's asking a lot from week to week. Him missing the entire offseason was rough for his development. You know, he didn't have the greatest of developers already working with him, and then missing that spring and fall camp, that's just brutal. His footwork has been nasty, and I don't know if he could clean that up from week to week, but I just want to see the kid play better, you know? And then, you know, give him a reason to smile at the end of the game, right, Will?
So he's not smiling. There we go. I am interested to see how he responds after obviously taking a lot of heat and not playing too well. So hopefully he comes out and he, you know, he has that killer mentality that I think is there. You know, he's the Gatorade National Player of the Year.
It's there. No, I'm around. It's a little nugget, so I'm it's probably gonna drop this like next week. But I'm producing his mom's podcast, and we're doing some stuff together. I'm helping her build her platform called Momagers, right? So I'm around the family. I've been around him a little while. Like, to be around DJ, like, he's competitive, bro. Like, you know, in front of the media, he has to be a certain way. He gets it. You know, he got to get his T-bow on. He has to come across a certain way, but he's the ultimate competitor. Like, he hate losing just like we hate losing, bro.
Oh, Will got a full dose of that this week, so.
Yeah, oh. I seen Pops pull up on Will.
Seen Papa Lags pull that up. That was crazy. 5 a.m. wake up call. I got Derek Lagway Sr. in my mentions. I was like, oh my goodness, I'm in so much trouble.
Nah, it's all love, man. They ain't tripping on it. They just, you know, they dealt with the tough season just like we did. You know, mm-hmm. They was caught off guard and wasn't liking the offense. And, you know, the way DJ playing, he know he's not playing up to his capabilities. But hopefully they can clean it up. You know, he's got to hit some of them throws. if he hits those throws and a couple other things, I don't want to put it all on him, but we could have won that football game. So I think they're going to play for Billy G. The defense is going to – Kentucky got a terrible offense. So I think it's going to be hard for them to score points. Our offense is good enough to move the ball on them. We should get that – we should win by double digits, in my opinion, 10 to 14 points. Hopefully we could do something, you know, get that turnover bug rolling, our sacks. We got two versus Georgia. Georgia hadn't given up any sacks. So that was impressive. So hopefully our pass rush come alive a little bit more on the road. Keep that stadium quiet and dead, and we handle business, man. If we could get to like 5 or 6 wins, that'd be dope. You know, in a throwaway season like this, like, you can't complain. So I'd like to see Billy G get his first W. I think he gets it.
Yeah, I think the with playing with an interim coach, I think that the first quarter is so important, because I know that these guys have not quit at all for Napier. But I do think as the season continues to go, I've been saying that Miles Graham is not going to let them quit. But I think that, you know, as the losses pile up, and if you get to a point where, you know, you're down 14-0 to Kentucky, then it could get, you know, the white flag mentality could come out quickly. So I think it's crucial to go out there and immediately put points on the board, get a 3-and-out kind of thing, and make sure that the competitive juices start flowing. Because once it's there, I think that the roster is so much more talented than Kentucky that it would kind of just take over, and, you know, the chance to win a game, they haven't had that feeling in a few weeks, and it's been few and far between. So I think the big sticking point is you got to get off to a good start.
Yeah. Sam, go ahead, Sam.
Sorry. Yeah, Sam, anything you've seen from Kentucky? I know you're at home a lot more on Saturdays as we're in Gainesville at tailgates and all that good jazz. Anything you've seen from Kentucky this year? Not much of a must-view TV type of situation with them, but
for sure. First of all, thanks for having me on the show, guys. Joking, but Corey, appreciate you joining us. Appreciate all you do for the Stadium Gale Network, giving us this platform, as well as, you know, being on the front lines of Gator Twitter. Your service is appreciated. In terms of Kentucky, I haven't really seen a lick of them. I don't know if he's still their quarterback, but they had Zach Calzada was their starting quarterback. Season open, so that's exactly where I'm at. When I saw that, I was like, oh my goodness, Kentucky. I remember when we did the preseason pie, mentioned a little bit, you know, the Stoops waters were a little murky over there too, and I think you can kind of see that. But like you guys mentioned, once both products are on the field, the talent we have is significantly better. You know, like Corey said, we really should have no problem beating them soundly, letting our players do the playing. Obviously, the injury report is shocking. That was a crazy thing to see, but I think we should handle business. Just want to see the guys continue to play hard, and I mostly want to know who scheduled this game at 7:30 at night. For who did that?
A cold night in Lexington can be a tough one in November. Mid-November can be a tough one to get up for, so hopefully they do start fast. I think Mark Stoops is a good cautionary tale of nearly leaving a job or leaving the door open to leave for a different job and then coming back and kind of losing your locker room and wearing out your welcome, that Lane might want to take note of, the more that he kind of lets, you know, 2022, the Auburn job festered, this year, the Florida job's festering. I think if you get to this point, what's happening at Kentucky with Mark Stoops is a good look at wearing out your welcome at a place that doesn't win traditionally. And eventually it falls apart, and the good jobs that were on the table are not on the table anymore sometimes, and you end up getting paid that buyout that you didn't really think that you were going to end up getting, because I think Mark Stoops is about on his last leg. But as far as the game goes, their offense stinks, man. You go into Jordan Hare and win, that's awesome, but it was a 10-3 snooze fest against, you know, maybe the only offense in the conference that's worse than yours. And then as far as what I'm looking for, I think that, you know, 3.5-point favorites seems low. I think that it's a product of having an interim coach on the road at night. Still an SEC game. They still got SEC football players. You know, Kentucky as a program, their defense has given us problems for what seems like a decade now, outside of last year. So I'm excited to see how they come out. I think that Billy G will have them ready to play, like we've said. I think that this was the loudest the noise in the system had been for DJ Lagway, maybe, you know, all season, maybe in his life, with how successful he was in high school and you know, last year, and you know, I think the noise got a little loud in Baton Rouge. I was in Baton Rouge and sat one row behind Derek Lagway Sr. And, you know, you see everybody was frustrated that game. It looked like, you know, they had seen a ghost, and obviously you hate seeing, you know, parents go through something like that with their son that's really struggling. I think that the criticism after the Georgia game was significantly worse than it was even after the LSU game earlier this year. I think, you know, obviously he played worse against LSU than he did against Georgia, but I think that it was more pronounced that, you know, he missed on a couple of throws that could have changed the outcome of the game against your biggest rival. So I think that DJ is a competitor. You know, like we said earlier, the Gatorade Player of the Year is still in there. And I think that you've seen him make certain plays, and he just hasn't quite put it all together. I guess, you know, it's a little bit part fundamentals, part, you know, the injuries, but you see the bits and pieces of the old DJ or the 2024 DJ. The throw to Eugene Wilson against Georgia was phenomenal. The touchdown pass, like you see those bits and pieces. So I'm hopeful and optimistic going into this game. You know, hopefully we get Mizell and VB3 back. You know, you lose Dallas Wilson for the year. You lose Eugene Wilson this week. But I'm hopeful and optimistic that the guy you saw make those phenomenal throws last year, the guy that you've seen in spurts this year, hears that criticism, internalizes it, and then turns around and plays with that chip on his shoulder and that competitiveness that we've been looking for, and that it starts in Lexington. So that's what I hope to see. That's what I think we'll see. I think he's a competitive guy, and excited to see how the guys come out and they play hard for Billy G this weekend.
Yeah, a lot of talk about their offense stinks, but they're 101st in the country in scoring offense. We are 105th. So to put this game at 7:30 at night is very questionable. I'd rather have that noon kickoff, get my day over with, and watch some other big time premier football games. But like we do on every show, scoring predictions. We'll start with you, Corey.
Whew, that's tough.
First one to 20 wins. First one probably to 10 wins.
Yeah, first one to 13 wins, in my opinion, bro. Give me their offense is terrible. I don't think they score more than 10 points on us. So, give me 21-10.
Ugh. Sam?
I'll go 24-10.
Will, we'll go around the horn.
I like the Gators 31-13. I think that Ryan O'Hara and Russ Callaway called a pretty good game plan against Georgia with a much better defense, and we probably should have put up 31 points on them if we had a couple more completions and a couple other things go our way. And I do think, you know, that a lot of these teams are struggling now that, you know, it is not Billy Napier's six plays on repeat. And so I think the offense is going to continue to look a little bit better, and that DJ fixes whatever things, he responds well, and we take care of business and look beat Kentucky the way we should have been beating Kentucky the last 10 years.
We're going to get a bourboned up Will Norris in the stands, and that's not anything that that Mark could have prepared for. So we'll go Gators 27-10.
Yeah, I'm with you, Dev. 27-10 feels about right. I don't know how we score 30, especially if we got Harrison Tenzer in the slot for us with all the wide receivers we got out.
Four touchdowns, one field goal, just like that.
But Gators just out-athlete them, probably get a big turnover on defense at the short field. And Jaden Ball should make this game go by quick, 30-plus attempts. Let's just get out of here injury-free and go on and get ready for Ole Miss and the Rebels the following week. So real quick, let's touch on some hoops. Everybody got – Corey, did you watch the game Tuesday night?
I did.
Monday
I was
night?
Podcasting, man. That's why we lost. I didn't watch it. I didn't do my Ty Golden tweet, man.
Yeah, it was those first 10 minutes looked like the Mike White PK-80 game, you know, when we're in the all-orange and we scored 90-something points, probably the most in his career. But
kind of the guard play was nasty, man.
Yeah, underwhelming out of the new guys. Xavier Lee got off the scoring, started the first 5 points, but I think he finished 5 of 17 from the field, 2 of 13. Really never had the ability to create his own shot and get a good look. He had a few open threes at the end that could have maybe changed the course of the final minute or so. Because, you know, the good thing, we lost, 93-87. I thought the big difference was just the thing that I liked was the fight we showed at the end, had the ability to potentially win the game with a Boogie Flan corner three to tie it. But this team does not quit despite having a bunch of new faces, even though we return a lot of talent from last year's national championship team.
There was a point, I think there was 6:50 left, and we had just tied the game up 70-70. And you're watching it, and you're, you know, this is the Florida Gators basketball program now. We're going to close this game out and win. And Hout took over. He ended up with 27. And I didn't think that we have or we don't know yet who the killer go get a bucket 5 minutes crunch time guy is yet. And that's okay. I mean, you're spoiled when you spend 40 games watching the greatest point guard in the history of the program.
Who struggled in his first game at point guard against Virginia. So
Exactly. You get very spoiled when you watch that guy, Will Richard and Elijah Martin, who hit big shot after big shot last year. So when you're 7 minutes left in a tie game against a top 10 type team with a true freshman phenom, that Pete guy is a freak. I think that game is going to be something we look back on as a major positive. We're going to take a lot away from it. I think that we have, you know, a couple months with big time opponents on the schedule where we're going to figure out who that guard is, whether it's Xavier Lee, whether it's Boogie Fland, whether it's somebody else that's going to take those big shots and you have confidence they're going to make them. But I think that it was one of those season openers where you're coming off a championship, you kind of have that championship musk on you still, and you feel invincible. You get into those crunch time moments and realize, all right, this is a different team. We're gonna have to find different ways to win, especially when you don't have the best guard trio in the country, at least at this point. So, gonna be different ways to win this year, different kind of team. You can't have your front court get dominated by freshmen, especially when you think you have the best front court in the country and four national champions in the rotation. So
this is why we paid Golden, and we believe in him. So let's see what the great coach can do with some adjustments as we progress throughout the season. Sam, what did you see Monday night?
Yeah, definitely an underwhelming performance from the front court specifically. It's going to take some time for the new guards to adjust. And like we've already mentioned, they have massive shoes to fill. Need to find that shot getter. And just to kind of talk about Koa Pete, a bit of a Arizona high school sports legend around these parts of town. I've been hearing his name for a couple years and gave us the exclamation point on Monday. That guy is special. From right down the road, went to the same high school as Brock Purdy. And I only mention that because there's a street named after Brock Purdy right when you turn into the school. And that's probably going to get renamed after Koa Pete in a couple of years when he's in the NBA. So that's just, he was special. He absolutely took control of the game. I had a feeling we probably couldn't be expecting it. You know, what film are we going to watch of him at the college level? So he just came in and took the game from us. And like you mentioned, Jackson, the fight at the end was encouraging to see. You really wish Boogie could have made that wide open shot and Xavier had a good look too, but I'm not worried. You know, it is what it is. We're going to lose a couple games. We have a super hard non-conference schedule. That's what happens when you're one, the University of Florida, and two, the defending national champs. So I'm not worried about it at all. And I think we'll find an identity. The front court will know that it runs through them, then they have to support the guard play. So I'm not worried. And like you said, you know, Todd's our guy. He's proven us time and time again that he can make adjustments and win games.
Corey, when does your fandom set in for basketball? I know some folks start like us in all 365. Some people join us in February, March. Where do you stand?
No, I'm ready to roll. I was just talking to my son yesterday about, I said, we got to hit some games this year. I haven't taken him to a basketball game, but no, I'm ready to roll right now. I got to get over these football blues, brother.
Yeah, I know. I know. That's what we thought Monday night was going to be for us. But we got an exciting home slate. I don't know if you've seen the Saturday conference home slate for hoops yet, but it is loaded with Bama, Arkansas, Tennessee, Kentucky. So Auburn. So you'll find a good one to take them to in the early spring.
Yeah, I'm definitely bringing them up, man. I haven't been to a basketball game myself in about 4 years. So it's been a while.
Yeah, you got to get that. Last time you've been, it was Mike White era.
Yeah, yeah, bro.
Same for me. Granted, I moved across the country.
But. Todd Golden's got the Odom sounding different these days.
Yeah,
close to hitting one last year. I missed it. I forgot what I had going on. I had some tickets that somebody gave me, and I ended up still missing it. But I'm definitely hitting one this year for sure.
I think that was that might have been the Ole Miss game, one of the later ones, late February. I think you and I were texting that day to pregame. Yeah. So you got to make your way up. What do we have? One home loss last year, Missouri, and we lost by one. So great home slate. And as always, like we mentioned, follow our guys, Florida Basketball Hour, Neil Blackman, Eric Fawcett. Those guys do a tremendous job. Had a great breakdown Tuesday morning after the loss. So make sure you guys are following them. They're also part of the Stadium Go Network. So stay plugged into the hoops, especially if you're diehards. And I think one of our followers responded back, if you don't follow Florida Basketball Hour, you're a casual. So you don't want to be labeled a casual.
Eric had I think he's on a bachelor party or something for his brother, like in Spain or something like that, Neil had said. But within, the very next morning, he posted a video that was 15 minutes long explaining exactly what was wrong with Florida's defense. And it's crazy how he does it. It's just clip after clip of us getting cooked in the pick and roll coverage. But he breaks it down just like a coach. It's like you're sitting there watching a film session. And I think it makes you smarter so that whenever you tweet out takes, you can stand your ground a little bit.
For sure.
Yeah, Corey, do you want to take us to that process? How did you get them on board? I mean, they've been a big following, a rapidly growing Twitter page and Patreon account. And how did you guys get them on board with Stadium & Gale?
Me and Neil, we talk all the time. So Neil's a lawyer, so I'm always hitting him up for legal advice on some things. So we always end up just talking about just Florida sports all the time and sometimes life, you know. But Neil's a cool guy. Eric's been coming on for a while. I was sitting around. Sometimes we have these ideas and we're slow on them sometimes, right? So I told Dan, the baseball show that ended up signing with In All Kinds of Well, I was like, hey, I think we should reach out to those guys about joining our platform. And we were talking about it for a few days, and then announcement hit that they had signed over there. So I was like, hey, I'm not dragging my feet anymore. Let's hit up Neil and see if they want to join the network, if we could collaborate some business. And we ended up making it happen. But, I've been cool with Neil for a very long time. Kind of how I started doing business with Dan, like with Stadium & Gale. He would come to our roll-up live events at that time out in St. Pete, met him, thought he was witty, funny, then we hung out in Gainesville a few times, and it was always good times with him and Nick. So when I got ready to start a Gators Only podcast, I reached out to him when I wanted to branch out from the roll-up. I was like, hey, man, I think I got Ahmad Black down. Would you want to join us? And he was with it. So now, these guys, man, I met some dope people, over the years on this thing, man. I really network on these apps. I know it's all fun. Everybody's having fun. But, even with meeting you guys, I met Jackson on there, and I'm a relationship builder, man. So just pretty much building relationships, man.
Well, I'm glad you said you met Dan in St. Pete. He talks about Tampa all the time, but he seems to find himself in Pinellas County a lot. So,
In that same breath, Corey, can you plug a little bit with what you're doing with Flow Factory now?
Oh yeah, man. So a lot of things. I got a deal down in Miami with 305 Plus Network. They asked me to come on and help them with some programming. They have all the rights to Dade County athletics. So every sport, high school football, basketball, track, anything. Miami-Dade Athletics, they have all the streaming and viewership rights too. They landed that deal through Adidas, ended up getting like $13.5 million or something crazy. They reached out to me later through Kenny Phillips, former defensive back for Miami. I met him through some friends, mutual friends down in Miami. Was trying to get him to invest in Flow Factory on some stuff, but that didn't end up happening. But when he landed the deal with 305 Plus and the rights to Miami Dade, he reached out to me, asked me, did I want to come on board as part owner and help them with programming and some other things. So we're in bed with 305 Plus in that platform. We also branched out in doing NIL agency stuff. So I have about four or five guys from the Dade County area that are helping me run an NIL agency. Right now we have defensive tackle James Johnson, who's committed to Texas. I know Florida, we was trying to get him at one point. We also have Trey Bell, who's committed to Florida State as a safety, and another defensive back, Amari Oquendo, who's originally from Rockledge. He's down at Miami Northwestern right now. Three-star, he's committed to FIU, but he has some ACC offers that's pouring in right now. I think he's going to have he's a 27 kid. I think he's going to have a big offseason. And we're about to sign a five-star receiver as well. It should be making that announcement, I think, in like next 7-10 days, 27 wide receiver. But just expanding a little bit, man. You know, using relationships that I built over the years to make some business go down a little bit.
Where can these guys follow Flow Factory at?
On every app, mainly on Twitter. We haven't been active on our YouTube lately, just because with the 305 Plus deal, I'm gonna be running all my content through that app just for business. You know, just for business purposes. You know, I get paid differently than from YouTube, and having my exclusive access there just from a longevity standpoint makes sense. So the 305 Plus app, you can download that on any platform if you want to check out anything Flow Factory. Instagram, Twitter, you know, the same old, same old.
That's awesome. I know that you've posted that you're retiring from the troll game, but I think that the four of us will volunteer to be your chief troll officer. And, you can get the controls to the Breakfast with the Gators account anytime you want
them. I appreciate it, man. Yeah, it's tough. You're trying to recruit a kid to your NIL agency and you're trolling the team that they're committed to, right? It's tricky, bro. So I was like, I just can't do it anymore, man.
Well, you got to tell the kids that all these years you spent trolling, you were actually just building relationships with all the fans, and look where it's gotten you. So trust the process and trust the trolls.
I think the kids get it. I think the parents don't. I think the players get it. I think it's more the parents.
Having gotten in hot water with some parents recently, I totally understand where they're coming from.
Right.
Well, man, we appreciate you joining us. Appreciate you letting us have this platform. I texted Corey right before the season, maybe 2 weeks before the season started, just saying, hey, a bunch of us idiots in a group chat just decided we want to get a podcast. Is there any platforms we should use that are free? He said, join the San Miguel Network. So we appreciate you a lot allowing us to do this twice a week now. And plenty more great content to come, especially as the coaching search gets a little bit hotter as we get closer to the end of the season. Basketball continues to take shape. I know myself and Will and Lovelace will be on scene Thursday night in the O-Dome for UNF, and then obviously next Tuesday as well as we host Florida State. So another show coming to you guys Sunday morning, recap of the Kentucky game. Will, are you going to be on? Are you going to have time to pod after the being live in attendance, or –
I might call in as I'm descending from the Kroger Field.
All right. Well, we look forward to having you getting the recap from
maybe Kroger. Maybe I'll get John from Tampa live and in person.
Yeah, I know. In. I know we had tried to get Paul on last week, and I think he was on the balcony overlooking the St. John's River. So I'm glad. I hope he's okay.
Ashley from Jacksonville is begging to be on the show.
All right. Well, I know Emily is going to have some choice words too from Jacksonville if Todd Golden loses another game shortly. So we might have to get them for a collaboration. But thanks, guys, again for joining on another episode of Breakfast Bites, part of our Breakfast with the Gators show. You can follow us on YouTube. Please like and subscribe, and our Twitter as well at BreakfastWTG. And we'll catch you again Sunday morning. Go Gators.
Go Gators.